As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Hey guys, it's Robert. Before we get started, I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge the tragedy that unfolded at the Chiefs Super Bowl parade yesterday, shortly after we finished recording this episode. As of right now, one person is dead, with another 10 to 15 reportedly injured in the shooting. I don't know what's left to say that others haven't already said. Several of the victims taken to local hospitals were reportedly children, kids who took the day off from school to create a lasting memory with their friends and family after watching their favorite team win the Super Bowl. We live in a country where those kids have to exist under a specter of violence like this every day, where they have to live in fear, even in moments and places reserved for celebration. I'll be thinking of those kids today, and of how we continue to fail them, over and over again. For now, I hope a conversation about football can provide some of you a little bit of levity, whatever that's worth. Thanks, and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Joining me for this week's edition of In the Pocket, it is longtime NFL quarterback Chase Daniel. Chase, how you doing, man?
Good, good. Just we decided to go on vacation right after Super Bowl, so we're in Hawaii right now. So this is coming to you from Hawaii, and the kids are out of the room. So we got about 45 minutes to an hour to get everything we needed to get talked about done before it becomes absolute chaos again.
I appreciate your dedication here. I'm going to Mexico on next week, and I will not be bringing my podcast equipment. Yeah. So we'll have some stuff coming your guys' way over the next couple weeks. I'll let you know either on social media at the end of the show what the de facto kind of off-season, early off-season schedule looks like. But there's still plenty coming your way on the Athletic Football Show feed, even if I will be out of town next week. But we're going to spend today doing kind of a second reaction look at the Super Bowl, because even if you're there like I was and you've think you're watching the game pretty closely, a lot of things that you can learn by going back and watching the tape. And I feel like the couple days after the game ends are, they're always like a nice time to do analysis, because there's so many different things you unearth as you go back and take a look at it. So I just straight away going back and watching the Super Bowl film, what is the number one takeaway that you had that you might not have had while watching the game live?
Well, there's two. I got two. I'm gonna cheat. I'm gonna do two. The first one is that Spags should be like the greatest coordinator of all time. Like, just his performance this year, his performance in the game. I saw you tweet it out, and I didn't know the number was that high in percent of man coverage. I think it was 60% man coverage, completely opposite of what he did. And he just said, you know what? We're going to go up and we're going to press the hell out of these receivers. Ayuk, we're not going to let Kittle get off the ball. Now, CMC, eight, right? He had 160 yards, 30 touches. That's fine. And his game plan was like, we're going to let CMC beat us. Because when you're in man coverage, you're a little light in the box. You're if your receivers run off, they're looking at them. So you're not looking at the ball at all times. But that was the issue. And honestly, like, when the Chiefs did play zone and played their too high look, that's when Brock had a lot of big plays, right? On all these in routes, on all these dagger routes. And as soon as they went back to man coverage, they just couldn't get off press. Like, they couldn't get off press. You got to give credit to Spags. I mean, that was the number one thing, probably. that stood out to me, just his game plan and how aggressive he was and how he attacked the right side of that San Francisco 49ers offensive line, which has struggled. And they struggled again this in the Super Bowl. But I would say that Brock did a hell of a job navigating pressure and not getting sacked and not getting like having horrible losses, was able to get rid of the ball on a few occasions. So they overcame that, and just how Spags was able to free up Chris Jones. Like, Chris Jones, in my opinion, had probably his best game of the year. Like, nonstop pressure. There's two plays that could have been touchdowns were it not for Chris Jones. And the third,
including
four,
that last drive. I mean, that last drive was a game sealing touchdown.
And four. Yes.
They scored a touchdown on the drive where he blew up that kind of play action leak play down the right sideline to Debo in the shot zone. So that didn't end up becoming a huge moment in the game because the Niners scored a touchdown. But the second one he had, when he gets that penetration with that miscommunication between the backup right guard and the right tackle, that becomes a huge swing play in the game. So I'm totally with you on that. And I'm totally with you on the Spags stuff too. Because I expected them to play like they normally do. Because if you look at teams that have given the Niners problems this year, it's a lot of zone coverage behind the blitzes. The Ravens do that. The Vikings do that. The Bengals do that. So I thought, oh, this is who the Chiefs are. Like, they'll be fine playing this way, because when you give Purdy that Rolodex of coverages, especially when you bring pressure, you're making him think a lot. You're making the game hard on him. And that's not what they did at all, because, like you said, they were getting diced up on it early in the game when they were playing zone. There was a play late in the half on the Niners' fifth possession where they brought number two, one of their backup corners, off the edge, and Purdy hits Ayuk on a little slant. And it was the last time all game, this is in the second quarter, that the Chiefs brought a blitz from depth and played zone behind it. It was the last one all game, and it was in the middle of the second quarter, because each time they did it, they were getting diced up. So if you look at it, the Chiefs played man coverage 79% of the time behind their blitzes in this game. 47% of their blitzes were cover zero, 32% were cover one. In the regular season, they were 50% playing man coverage behind their blitzes. So you go from 50 to 79, which is a great changeup. And I'm sure he's comfortable with me saying this. I asked Steve Spagnuolo this week. I just texted him. I said, why did you guys do that? Like, why did you guys end up playing so much man behind the blitzes? And he said, we just wanted to close up the passing windows. So when we were giving them space, we just felt like there were plays to be made, and that's exactly what it was. And that is a lot of credit to him for the game plan and a lot of credit for those DBs and what they did behind it.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was impressive, because obviously when you sort of completely change who you are on offense, not completely change, but I mean, you had 30% more man pressure behind it, it can put a lot of stress on DBs, right? That's where the stress comes from, because if you fall down, or if you slip, or if you do something like Chris Conley motioned over in a 2x2 on a big third down to the number three receiver, and it was man coverage, and he toasted one of the DBs, I don't know who it was, and got open. And it's like, okay, like, are you sure you want to continue to play man coverage and pressure? This is why they're so good. And if that's where it puts the onus on these DBs to actually lock it up, because like I said, if you slip, you're done. If you get picked, you're done. And all this stuff. And I think that Brock and Kyle Shanahan had a really good plan for when they were zone pressuring. Like, hey, just get the ball out. Like, quick hitters. Let's sight adjust. Let's throw our hot. Let's get into the right play. And I was surprised, I think, at how much scat protection, which is five-man protection, that Kyle Shanahan put Brock Purdy in. Like, they did it more than I probably thought, especially versus a team that brings double edge pressure a lot, that plays cover zero a lot. And I think that was the biggest part of the game, because I mean, Brock Purdy, I think, started 8 of 11, 104 yards or something, and was on fire, and then sort of hit a lull when he switched it up between really the second quarter and halfway through the fourth quarter. And then Brock started figuring some stuff out, was able to get it to OT. But it's just, it's what the Chiefs have won with all year long. Like, this is no difference. Like, Spags has been this way all year long. This has easily been Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs' best defense that they've had. Spags just signed another extension, like, probably one of the highest paid D coordinators. Like,
as he should be.
I don't know if he, as he should be. And honestly, like, some people and some coaches They just don't want to be head coaches. They don't want to deal with all that crap. They don't want to deal with, they just want to call the defense. They want to be on the same team as Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, get as many rings as you possibly want. And I just think that finally this year, Spags got the credit he deserves, because when he was with Mahomes and Mahomes was doing everything that Mahomes was doing, it just sort of like went by the wayside. But what they've done with Brett Veach drafting, what they've done putting this defense together, Spags calling this defense to everyone's strengths, I think that is the big story of the Super Bowl, in my opinion.
The scat protection, I wanted to talk to you about this, because I think in the second half specifically, one of the biggest disconnects between who the Niners were and who the Chiefs were is the amount of work that the quarterback could do at the line of scrimmage and getting his guys in the right protection and the right plays against those pressure looks on third down specifically. The Chiefs, we know this. Patrick Mahomes has full autonomy at the line of scrimmage. He can do anything he wants. He can change any protection he wants. That is the control he has within that system. Brock Purdy does not have the same, because that's not how the Niners protection system works. Quarterbacks are not given that level of flexibility and autonomy. It's often on the center, and that's why, look at what Kyle Shanahan has done for most of his career. He had the same center follow him to three different places. Alex Mack was in Cleveland, then Alex Mack was in Atlanta, and then Alex Mack was in San Francisco, because of how important it is to have the right guy in that spot within this system. So as somebody who knows all of these different protection systems and the way that they work, do you think this was an example of kind of the shortcomings of that approach from the Shanahan protection system showing up in a moment like this?
I mean, it has to be, right? It has to be. And I think that Spags was one of the teams to and defenses to figure it out. And it's like, yeah, these guys, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, CMC, I mean, Jennings, Debo, Ray McLeod, like all these guys like showed up in big times, and they have, in my opinion, probably the number one skill group in the NFL. And it's not even close, like everyone all together. And if you can get the ball to those guys, it's great. But when protection breaks down, when you are like, that's been really the big struggle all year long for the San Francisco 49ers. The one weak spot on their team is their offensive line, other than the left tackle, in my opinion, right? Like, so they've dealt with this all year. And honestly, it's not talked about enough. It's not written about enough. People don't give Brock enough credit, but he's had to navigate some dirty pockets, man. Like no more than what he had to deal with in the Super Bowl, especially on the right side. And I was surprised that Shanahan did go to scat protection a lot. And there were times where, and I'm sure you saw it, and I'm sure everyone saw it, but they're doing these random, like we call it buck pass, and you're pulling the guard or you're pulling the center, you're trying to get a suck up from a linebacker. Two or three times they did that, and two or three times it was like pressure right away. He had to throw it out. I mean, it was the perfect example on the third and four, where they start and empty, the last play of the season, really, for San Fran. They end up kicking a field goal. Jennings is open on an escape route, like wide open. I went back, watched it, like slow-mo'd it, like, it is so open, and they're starting Christian McCaffrey to the right, coming across, faking like a jet sweep to him while they're pulling the guard. Well, you know, Chris Jones just comes scot-free. And it's like they don't – you have to get out of those protections, those certain type of protections, like the buck pass when you're pulling the center or pulling the guard. When there's five across, like you don't have enough guys if it's five down for you to block it. And there was just no check for it. Like Brock knew right away, hey, I just got to sort of live with it. And hopefully, you know, we're going out to it, but there's two off the edge. You don't got nothing to do but to throw the ball away. And if they're not in that protection, if they're just 5-0 it and they block 5-on-5, forget about the pool. The quarterback in places I've been has had the chance to change that and say, hey, on this buck pass we're pulling, if it's five across, just say 5-0. We don't need the sell. It's man coverage or zone pressure. The sell of the play fake does nothing. And the route comes wide open. And it would have been wild to see what would have happened if we would have got a second overtime or whatever, if they would have scored, because Juwan Jennings would have walked in and quite honestly been the MVP.
I think I counted three plays where they had that sort of buck protection where they were pulling either the guard or the center that ended in negative plays for the Niners. That's the biggest example. Yeah. But on the second drive of the second half, it was the first drive of the second half. They tried to do the same thing where they pulled Brendel against one of those looks, and Chanel came as a free runner and forced Purdy to throw it away. So then it goes, that's the first drive of the second half, first play. Yep. That goes to second and 10. And then they have a false start. to get them to second and 15. Yeah. So people are saying, well, why didn't they run the ball more? Why didn't they run the ball more in the second half? So the first drive, it was second and 15 after a botched play action pass and a false start. Second drive, that's the drive where Chris Jones reads the boot perfectly on first and 10, gets penetration. Purdy throws it to Jennings for an 8-yard loss because Chanel was in the flat sitting there waiting for it.
Yeah, and I don't know how Chris Jones didn't get that sack because Purdy did some voodoo stuff on him to make sure it wasn't even a sack. And I was thinking, like, just throw it away. And he, I mean, obviously you complete it. It's almost like a better if it's incomplete pass. But
he should have just thrown it at his feet because then it's second and 10 and then you can get back on track. But those were two huge plays because now on the first two drives of the second half, you're at a second and 15 and a second and 18. So there were a lot of negative plays in those moments. Yep. You mentioned the Jennings completion and the Chris Conley completion on third downs in this game. The Niners were 3 of 12 on third down. Those were two of their three third down conversions. On those completions, there was a sail route to Chris Conley early in the game, and then he hit Jennings on it was a beautiful route on third and medium. Both of those completions were against backup corners, and that brings me to the conversation I wanted to have about the two other corners for the Chiefs in this game. So let's get to "Looking Good Out There" by Indochino and talk about two guys who were definitely looking good out there in this game. Yeah. The reason that the Chiefs could play 60% man coverage against a team that has Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk is that the two outside corners, the number one and number two corners for this Chiefs team, L'Jarius Sneed and Trent McDuffie, played out of their minds in this game. When I went back and watched, anecdotally, you're watching the game, and two things we mentioned in our initial recap were it seemed like they were playing more man, and then you saw the numbers like, holy shit, they're playing a lot more man. It seemed like McDuffie and Sneed were playing at an insane level. And then I went back and watched, and it was even better than I remembered. Every single time these guys were put in a man coverage situation, they were just gloving people up. There was a play on right before the Niners kicked a field goal in the first half, that deep shot they took to Deebo down the left sideline. On that play, Sneed puts Ayuk in the ground. He puts him in the ground with an initial jam, and then McDuffie is following Deebo step for step down the left sideline for that PBU. There were multiple in-breakers to Deebo that they tried to hit on third down or late in series.
It was two-man.
McDuffie's just with him step for step. There was another play where Sneed is with him step for step on an in-breaker. And McDuffie obviously had one of the plays of the game on that unblocked pressure on third and four, which we could talk about. Yeah. But the play before that, he's in man coverage on Kittle. He gets sucked up by the play action fake, but gets back to Kittle in the flat and makes a tackle for no gain on second down to force that third and four. There were so many moments from both of those guys in this game that you noticed, but there were just as many where you wouldn't have noticed how good they are. So this game plan is only possible because of what those two dudes can do against arguably one of the best wide receiver duos in the entire NFL. They were ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, both of those guys played insane. And you hit like everything that I wrote. Like, it's hard for me as a quarterback to go in and watch the actual defense. Like, when I'm breaking down Purdy, which we just released it, I'm like, I just want to see what Brock Purdy does. Like, I just want to see the reads offensively. What are the concepts? And then this is probably, I'm going to be honest, like, this is probably one of the first games where I'm breaking down Brock for my quarterback breakdown and telestrating. And then I find myself halfway through the game going over to the defense and be like, wow, like I rarely watch corner now. Like I used to watch it all the time, but it just play after play, time after time, big down after big down, third down, fourth down, whatever it was, my eyes did go to the corners. And that says a lot for a quarterback that just wants to break down quarterback play when you actually can go to the defensive side of the ball. And it was what got me excited about those two guys. It's obviously like two all pros in my opinion. And L'Jarius Sneed, I mean, allowed one touchdown all year long, right? It was a Buffalo game. And he's going to get paid. Like, honestly, like it's a different show, but I just don't know if the Chiefs are going to be able to pay him and Chris Jones and Willie Gay. Like, I don't know how that will happen, but that's why I enjoyed watching him in a Chiefs uniform because Spags just said, go up there and beat the heck out of him. Go press him. Get in their grill, like make them know that you're there and the physicalness of that. Not only that, but to be able to be like, I think, I don't know about you or anyone else out there listening. I think Brandon Ayuk in my opinion, is a top 5 to 6 receiver in the NFL. Like,
he's one of my favorite players in the league and has been for like 3 years. So this season and everyone realizing that this guy is that guy has been very fun.
It's unreal. Yeah. And I really do think he's a top 5 or 6 receiver in the NFL. Like, what he's done, and to put the clamps on him and to stay with, because Ayuk is super tall, super fast, excellent route runner, like all three of those. And for a guy like McDuffie or a guy like Legarrette to stay with him all game long when they're playing 70% man coverage or whatever number, 60% man coverage the game, it just puts a lot of trust in those guys. And when you have guys like that, like, all right, we can play man. And I think that's why Spags ended up playing so much. But it was just really impressive from a standpoint of, like, you know, it's impressive for me, at least, when I'm watching and I'm watching Brock and I go across to the other side of the ball. I'm like, oh, let me just watch a couple snaps of these guys and just see their technique and ability and reach. And Trent McDuffie on the Deebo Samuel ball was like step for step, like it's cover zero. I'm just going to stay step for step with you. Like, it was impressive to me.
I wonder what they're going to do when it comes to paying those guys, because they can free up a lot of money this season specifically if they want to. MVS has like no guaranteed money left on his deal.
I don't think MVS is going to be there.
They would save $12 million if they moved on from MVS. And then Mahomes has a $36 million roster bonus next year. So if they just convert that to a signing bonus and they get his cap hit down from $58 million like it is right now to, what would it be, $25 million, that's another $30 million in space if you want to free it up. So we're talking about like potentially $50, $60 million in cap space if they want it. It becomes a cash question, and this team has at times been a little bit hesitant to do that, but could they draft a receiver? Could they try to go back in the draft and find somebody else, or do you think they need an immediate option?
I think they need an immediate option. I mean, if you look at the entire roster of
Won the Super Bowl with the guys they had.
Bro, I'm telling you right now, I guarantee it, because I know those guys, Veach and Andy Reid, are going to fix the freaking receiver room. Like, they got Rashee Rice, and I think that's an actual amazing pick. Like, I think he's going to be really good. You got to have a guy like T. Higgins, or a guy like, you got to have a vet, you got to draft a guy. You got Patrick Mahomes, you need to put the weapons around. They average 7 points less a game, and they made the Super Bowl because of their defense, and then finally the last four games of the postseason, the offense shows up. So I think you need a receiver. When I come to the Chris Jones questions, like, for me, it's like, he, other than Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes, he's probably second or third on the team in terms of like leadership, like what it brings, the value of the locker room, getting guys in the same area and the same direction and the same mindset. Like, he's that guy. Like, you can't let go of him. And quite honestly, he's one of the better interior players to play. And then the question becomes, Legarrette, do you have enough money? He's going to command $20 million a year. Right? Or whatever the top corner market is. I mean, he played like it. He's going to get it. How is it structured? Or do you put the franchise tag on him? Like, do you just don't let him go and just be like, hey, I think we can free up some stuff. And then, in my opinion, if you put a franchise tag on him, I do think that there would be a team out there that would sign him to an offer sheet. Like, I really do think something like that would happen. And then Willie Gay, I think he's probably out. I think he's a good player, but I think what Drew Tranquil was able to do at $3 million coming in for Willie Gay and for Nick Bolton, like, that was a steal. They're definitely going to, in my opinion, need to re-sign him. He's another leader type guy, but it's an interesting off season. And I think it starts with those really three guys on really two. I don't think they're going to re-sign Willie Gay. It's Chris Jones, Legarrette Sneed. And then you know what? It is February 14th. It's Valentine's Day. If they don't sign a receiver in free agency, like a legit like guy, then you can do something. We can call me crazy. Like, I just really think they're going to get a guy. Like, you have Patrick Mahomes. You just won the Super Bowl. You can get a legit guy for $14, $15 million a year. You don't got to pay top money. Like, there's some guys out there that are free, and I'm sure they'll draft a guy, but you got to have somebody else, man. In my opinion,
the signing Chris Jones and tagging Legarrette Sneed plan, I can get behind that. Right now, I think the franchise tag for corners is like $18 million this year.
18 or 19, right?
Which you can absolutely afford. And I'm tempted to say they should just re-sign both of them because they're so good and they're so foundational to what this version of the Chiefs are. But
who would you rather have, though? This was asked to me, and I was hard for me to answer. And I think it's a good conversation for our listeners. Like, if you had, if you could only afford Chris Jones or L'Jarius Sneed, who would you have?
And so why? After the game, immediately after the game, because I had spent a good chunk of the game watching the DBs, because when you're there, it's like the only chance you can have in real time to actually watch the defensive backs play. So I was just enamored with the way that McDuffie and Sneed played. So when we were chatting, me and Nate just sitting in the stadium, I was like, man, I just don't know how you move on from L'Jarius Sneed after the way that he played. But then after rewatching the tape, I'm like, I don't know how you move on from Chris Jones, considering the way that he played. So I've kind of switched my tune on this over the last couple of days. The reason that I think I would land on Chris Jones is because finding a pass rusher that can impact the game like that, there are just fewer of them, period, over the entire league. I thought that he was the defensive player of the year in 2022. I truly believed that. I think he's that rare of a piece up front. And the Chiefs specifically have done such an excellent job of reloading at those defensive back spots. Think about the process they went through with Tre'Davious Ward 2 years ago. Tre'Davious Ward develops in that system as, I think, an undrafted free agent or a very, very late draft pick, becomes a Pro Bowl caliber player. They let him walk in free agency. He signs with the Niners. And then the replacements that they eventually find with Sneed bumping outside end up being better. What Dave Merritt, their defensive backs coach, and what Steve Spagnuolo have been able to do developing players at those positions has been one of the secret sauce elements to why this Chiefs dynasty has been possible. So I think if I had to pick one, that's why I would pick Chris Jones, even at his age. But I would love for them to find a scenario, a path to be able to bring both of them back, even if it's just for next year.
I agree with you. I think it's Chris Jones. And purely because, like, I love the Jerry Sneed, had the season of a lifetime, but you can't find pass rushers like this. Like, you just – interior pass rushers like this, like, it's just that few and far between.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
We haven't talked about Patrick Mahomes at all so far on the show.
Well, that was my second point. Yeah. But you said the takeaways. I never got to it because we ended up like just going on the tangent of Steve Spagnuolo. But that was my second point. So what were you going to ask about it? Because I can tell you.
What stood out to you just about the way that he played?
Well, you know, so when we first started, I was like, hey, I have two observations. The first is Steve Spagnuolo. And we talked about him for 15 minutes, rightfully so. Probably could talk about him on the whole show. My second observation was just how freaking good Patrick Mahomes is. And it is so difficult for a player that's played in the league like I have, or a guy like you who's covered the league, or really anybody to be like, why is Patrick Mahomes so good? Like, okay, we know it, right? Like, we know the physical. We know he can make all the throws. He's transcended upon the game, like all this stuff. And I just find myself thinking, like, you look at the 2 minute drive to win the game.
I thought you meant the 2 minute drive in the first half, but the 2 minute drive to win the game is just as important. So keep going.
Like, the 2 minute drive to win a freaking Super Bowl. Like, you look at the drive and you break it down. It's 13 plays and there's really no like splash plays through the air. It's just him taking underneath completions. And if you look at it, it's just like, okay, you're moving. Then he starts using his legs. Then that fourth and one, then that third. And it's just like, it just, He just knows how to take over a game. And then you look at this, like, I'm pretty sure it was the Rashee Rice shallow cross versus cover zero in that drive. Am I right? Mm-hmm. Where he hit Rashee Rice on the shallow cross to get passed into field goal range. And the 49ers and Steve Wilks are cover zero and Patrick Mahomes. And in my mind, I'm thinking, why are you like zeroing the greatest quarterback of all time? In my, like, he knows it's coming. He understands when it's, when the blitz is happening. He understands what's going on and where his answers are. And if you watch that play, I think Jerick McKinnon's in. He comes across, tries to like pick Fred Warner, and Mahomes just ever so slightly moves to the right because he knows where the free rusher is. Okay. And he just ever so slight. And then you, it's just a shallow cross, but he has to get it over all the hands standing up. Okay. And then really, they aren't really rushing. They're must rushing. He gets it through a window, but the ball placement on the throw in the biggest point in the game on a third down is like right on Rashee Rice's head. And so it allows him to continue running and to get around the edge and to get like an 18-yard gain or 20-yard gain, whatever it was. It's the fine details on every single snap of the game. If you remember, I think it was the two-minute drive in the fourth quarter. He goes up there. It's a huge third and two, I think. And once again, Steve Wilks is showing cover zero. So Mahomes is, hey, he does his football signal. He gets everyone lined up. He moves Jerick McKinnon over. And, dude, I've never seen this work, but we practice it all the time. It's called a bluff screen. And that's exactly – he got to a bluff screen in the biggest point in the game when probably he hasn't practiced it with Jerick McKinnon, you know, since he was hurt. And he goes and he slides the line full left, and you can see the center, Creed Humphrey, like, all right, let's go. Everyone's like, are you sure? You want to do this right now? Are you sure? Yeah. Jerick McKinnon goes, bluffs the blitzer coming from Mahomes' right. And Mahomes just – nice, easy dot to him in the flat. And for 6 yards, not big, but it gets him in a field goal range.
Oh, it's like a game-changing play. To check into that moment was one of the biggest plays of the game.
But I'm saying – like from a pure, if you're just looking at this game from a pure stat point, you're like, oh, 6 yard completion. All right, it's good. How he got there, you have to really dive into it and understand, oh, that was a check. That was the biggest play of the game because they're able to send it to overtime. Then the Travis Kelce one and the rhythm and just everything that about him and how he's really evolved from a player that can do it all physically to a player that's really locked in mentally. And we've said it before, but the best player in the world is continuing to get better. That's a scary thought for all the NFL.
The mental side of it, I think, is what's really jumped out in terms of the stuff he's handling at the line of scrimmage, the protections. It's a combination of mental acuity and knowledge, but also feel. The changing protections, that's like if you're taking a test. You know, I have the answers to the test. I can write it in. That's actual knowledge. But you combine that with the feel that he has for the position, and that's where it gets really scary. What you're talking about, where it's a slight drift here, it's a slight drift there. The amount of things he can do with his legs in those moments. I wanted to talk about the two-minute drive before the half because those are the types of things that get lost to history. We're going to remember everything that happened in the second half. But yep. The two-minute drive before the half, when they went down and kicked a field goal, there's a third and nine, and he buys time to his right and then eventually throws back across his body to Justin Watson for a huge 20-yard gain on third and nine. It's just one of those plays that we'll never think about again if you didn't rewatch the game, but it's beautiful. And then he hits Rashee Rice on a slant on that drive. They go down, they kick a field goal. And it's 3 points that end up becoming hugely important. Yep. And then there was a drive in the second half. They kick another field goal. There was a third and four, and he gets 4 yards on a scramble. It was the play before that 20-yard keeper that got Bosa when he was crashing down. So just all those little plays that add up over and over and over again.
Three times with the crashing. That was
they did. And it was a great game plan because he made, I think, one or two TFLs screaming down the line. Yeah. So being able to have a counter to that, I think, is exactly right. But there are just so many third and fours, third and eights that he just picks up over the course of the game. Just like reaching down on the ground and putting it in his pocket over and over and over again. And when you're playing against that guy in those high leverage moments and he continues to find those, that's the subtle greatness. Like that's the type of stuff that, again, unless you go back and watch every single play, you're probably never going to remember. But when you accumulate those over a game, over a stretch in the playoffs, over a season, that's what makes him so, so good, is that he's making all of those plays while making very, very few mistakes.
Did you see the tweet yesterday from Barstool Big Cat about Mahomes?
Well,
because
I think
it fits here.
It was Neil Payne.
Neil Payne.
So Neil Payne from his Substack tweeting that I think it was a certain set of circumstances. You can read it off.
Yeah, because I mean, look, it's a little bit long, but yeah, it's Neil Payne, but Big Cat put it out, and then obviously, like, you can see right here, Neil Payne, Neil Substack. So Mahomes, since 2001, there have been 125 drives in NFL postseason where it was at least the fourth quarter. There was under a minute left to play, and the team on offense trailed by 7 points or fewer at the start. These are your standard clutch moments for a football team, the do-or-die drives that win and lose critical games. Out of those 125 drives, only 40% of them saw the team on offense pull off the magic trick and get the points they needed, which I think 40% is actually pretty high.
Yeah, that's impressive, actually. Yeah,
that's impressive. So that point, it was like, well, only – I think that's a good number. Some quarterbacks are pretty good at it. Tom Brady went 5 for 11, 46%. My guy Drew Brees, 3 for 6, 50%. Only Patrick Mahomes, though, is 7 for 7. In those dire situations, he's perfect. That is the exact, like, under a minute left to play, and he's like, I got this. I'm perfect on it. And it's the biggest game of the year. It's the biggest game. I'm just going to go do it again. Like, it's just, it was insane.
With that in mind, how surprised were you when the Niners decided to take the ball in overtime?
So my original reaction, just like everyone else, and I tweeted it out, I was like, I think Kyle Shanahan forgot the rules. Like, that's the first thought that comes to me. Like, I literally think that maybe he, like, forgot the rules. And then NFL Films comes out today, and Shanahan's like, no, we're taking the ball. And I'm like, oh. And then you see Juice in NFL Films like, oh, if we score, they get a chance to score too. Like, everyone was surprised. And as the week goes on, I'm thinking, it's such the wrong decision. At this point, it's such the wrong decision. Like, you get nothing of going first. You get nothing at all. There's no momentum at this point. It's a tied game. It's a brand new game.
Like, well, let's say they go down. You kick the field goal. If they go down and kick a field goal, then you get the ball and it's sudden death. So essentially, you are trying to recreate the circumstances of the old overtime rules by taking the ball first.
I get it. But, like, you can say, you give Patrick Mahomes four downs.
That's the problem.
You get an extra down.
In
a
vacuum?
If you're Brock Purdy on the first one, you're thinking you're gonna go down and score a touchdown or a field goal. But if you don't, and say you get to the 50 and you're like, all right, it's fourth down and four, well, you're not going for it. Like, you're punting, okay? And they got a field goal. The defense held for the Chiefs. And then you give Mahomes four downs to march down, which they got the fourth down on that, right? And then it's just like, I thought it was, like, that just tells you how surprised I was when I was like, I thought Kyle Shanahan forgot the rules. And the fact that it's come out this week that says all the 49er players had no clue of the rule. And Drew Tranquil told everyone, like, we've had meetings on this every single week since we've been in the playoffs. We've gone through scenarios. We have done everything that we need to twice during Super Bowl week. And by the way, we were told that if we score, we're going for two for the win. So your argument and everyone else's argument, you don't know that. It's like, oh, well, they have to score a touch. It don't matter. The Chiefs were going for it. They weren't getting this thing going. So it's just, in my opinion, you gain nothing from going first.
In a vacuum, if you're looking purely at the numbers and simulations and everything else, I get it. I understand thinking it's a 50-50 shot. We want sudden death. Going against this guy in this moment and giving him the four downs, knowing that all he needs to do is score a touchdown. I was there in Kansas City when they played the Bills, and that game went to overtime. And I remember how inevitable it felt as soon as they got the ball with a chance to go down and score a touchdown and win the game. It just felt like it was all but guaranteed. It's like, okay, this is going to happen. It's just a matter of how and how long it's going to take for them to go down and do it. So with that in mind, I think that I understand throwing out the numbers, throwing out the process, and just saying, we want to make sure we know what we need after they go down and either kick a field goal or score a touchdown. Yeah. So there's part of me that wants to defend it because I get having a, you go into it, you talk to your people, you know what you're going to do when the moment comes. But because Patrick Mahomes is on the other side, I can also understand switching it up and just saying, we want all the information possible. We don't want to give him four downs to do this.
What do you think? I mean, that was surprising, but what was even more surprising for me was Kyle Shanahan's choice to go for it on fourth and three when a field goal would have tied it. What were your thoughts on that? Was it a field goal would have tied it, or a field goal would have given them the lead? I don't know what it was, but the fourth and three at the 20-yard line when they could have easily kicked a field goal.
Oh, in that moment, I think it's a great decision. I think it's it ended up being huge. If they kick a field goal there, we might not even go to overtime. Because I remember I went back and rewatched this morning, and when they did that, when they had the third down stop, I was like, oh man, that's a huge stop. And then I had forgotten that they got the fourth down, and they scored a touchdown on the next play.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, for me, I'm thinking like, well, if you don't get the fourth down, and I think what was the score at that point?
So at that point, they were down 13. They were down 13 to 10.
13-10, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think I would have just – it was – I was more surprised about that just in the flow of the game, the way the game was going, that you're passing up points to potentially tie it. Now, you get it and you score the next play. You go up 17-13 or whatever it was, but I I don't know. I mean, it's just – it was wild to me.
Fourth and three, 12:46 left in the game. You're down. You know he's getting the ball at least one more time. Maybe two more times. So even if it's tied, let's say you know they're going to score on at least one more possession over the course of the game based on who you're playing against. I get, even in that moment, knowing that a field goal would tie the game, thinking that you know you're going to need more points before this thing is over. Yeah. And from the 15 maybe is your best shot.
I think you're handicapping yourself, though, because if they do... If you don't get it and say Mahomes goes down and scores a touchdown, that's a 10-point lead. It's a two-score game. At least you give yourself a chance to have a one-score game. Now, now it was the right decision because he got it. But I'm saying from my aspect of like not being as super like go-for-it heavy as some analytics and teams, that's all I'm saying is like you know Mahomes is probably going to score more. And if you don't get it, think about how big of a blow it would be to the sideline. Like, oh, man. And then they go down. Now we're down 10. And we got to get two scores to even tie. Like, I don't know. All that played into my decision.
This is always my question here. Okay. Let's say you don't get it. Okay. And you miss the fourth down. They have the ball in their own 15. Yep. Is kicking the field goal there as an offense, is that really some big boost to morale? Or is the boost that you get from the touchdown, is that trade-off worth it there enough? That's my question.
Yeah, I mean, against Mahomes, like, I would be like, let's tie it. Like, that's just what I'm saying.
Against Mahomes, I'm thinking I want every point.
Yeah.
I want every point that I can get.
What if you don't make it? Like, there's a chance you don't make it there. And the funny thing is, they didn't even run some, like, crazy play. It was just like a little
out route to Kittle. I know, it was very easy. It was an out route to Kittle.
Versus outside leverage, too. I'm just like, oh. Like, where was Kittle at the whole game? Like, why don't you go to more than that? I don't know. It's just an interesting conversation. Everyone's going to be like, oh, yeah, I'm sure when they listen to this, Robert's right, Chase is wrong. I'm just saying, like, because I do think people are more like, go for it. What do you have to lose? I'm just saying there is something to lose there if you don't make it and Mahomes goes down and now you're down 10 points.
I think when you were not moving the ball very consistently over the course of that half. You're already down to the 15. I always think about it as, is there going to be a worse scenario you're going to have to go for it on fourth down if you don't end up getting those four extra points in this moment? Or is this going to be your best shot to push it a little bit and make sure you score a touchdown?
To get seven. Yeah.
Yes. And in that moment, I can totally understand going for it. I get kicking it. I get the argument for it. But I support trying to go for it in that moment, knowing that you're already on the 15-yard line and you're probably going to give him the ball two more times before this game is over.
Yeah, it was just surprising to me when they did it like live in person. I was like, oh, okay. Like I was thinking
maybe Kyle doesn't usually do that.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So maybe any other team that you're not playing Mahomes, maybe they kick it and just be like, all right, we're playing good defense.
But I think he said that after the game. I think after the game he said that typically we wouldn't do something like that, but I know who the guy on the other sideline is.
Yeah.
And so he's had to deal with this too many times.
So then why did he take the freaking ball in OT? If he knows that, like, that it's like completely.
I think that's a decision they made weeks ago. And yeah, I think that's a decision they made weeks ago. And he even said that after the game. He said, that's something we went over with our analytics guys. We thought when we got in that scenario, we were going to take the ball first And I think that these were his exact words. The gut feeling also lined up with that in the moment, is that I wanted the ball first so we could have it in sudden death. And eventually that became
give him
a
home
mistake.
Four downs.
But
yeah, it's just
I think in that moment we learned a lot about what the real world implications of that decision are. You can go through as many simulations because this is the first time we've ever seen it. Totally. It's the first time we've ever seen this. So all you have to go on so far is all the simulations your analytics team is running and them playing it out a million different times in a million different scenarios of what is best. And you probably land somewhere near 50-50 and it becomes a preference. But now we've seen it happen in real time and we've seen what it feels like when you're taking the ball against a guy like this. I have to assume that we'll see teams fall on the other side of the line a little bit more often after this one.
Well, I just think it's hilarious that they made the rule because of the Chiefs, and the Chiefs were the one to say, that not so fast, we'll still win. Like, that to me is just like full circle moment right there.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokers Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
The last thing I wanted to ask you, we've had two overtime Super Bowls in NFL history. Kyle Shanahan has been on the wrong side of both of those. He's been in three Super Bowls. He's lost two of them to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Yep.
If you're the Niners, you're bringing everybody back for the most part. We'll see what happens with Ayuk. You know, he's going into the last year of his deal. I have to assume that if they traded him, they would get Hall.
Please don't trade
for him.
My God.
But at a certain point, you know, they've done this in the past. They traded DeForest Buckner. Yeah. They got a first-round pick for him. So the reason that I'm thinking about this is I'm wondering, like, what the Bears would have to give up to get Brandon Ayuk and sign him to an extension. It's like, all right, if we give
that
you
– that would be sick.
If we give you nine and you give us Ayuk and one of your third-round compensatory picks, let's call it a deal. I was already laying in bed thinking about that last night. But for argument's sake – let's say that they keep him, they keep their entire core, they use the resources that they do have to maybe beef up the interior of the offensive line a little bit. This is set up to be a very good team moving forward. I think that Brock Purdy played really, really solid football this year. I was impressed with the way that he played in the Super Bowl. But if you're in that Niners locker room and you're a member of that Niners organization, do you think this lingers? Like, how do you come back from what that moment felt like in short order?
Yeah, I mean, we said it. Maybe a couple weeks ago or the week before the Super Bowl show, whatever we did, preview show, was like, it is the absolute worst feeling to lose in the Super Bowl. Like there's no worse feeling, especially to lose in overtime to Patrick Mahomes, right? So you're so close and you're thinking, man, if it's not Patrick Mahomes on the other side, we might have it. And the way they started the game, I thought offensively, I thought the first half, like Kyle Shanahan won the first half. Like
they outplayed them significantly in the first half.
Close. And then it's only like, what is it? Was it 10-6 at halftime or 10-3 at halftime?
They should have had a bigger lead. I mean, that
should have
had a bigger lead. Punt is a huge play. The muff punt is a game changing play. And then the other one that I had forgotten in the moment, and then you rewatch and you think about how important it was, the fake screen to Ayuk that they overthrew. That's a potential touchdown. He's open on that play. There were a bunch of missed opportunities for them in this game. They could have put it away much earlier than they did.
Purdy on the missed throw to, I say the missed throw, but Chris Jones on the huge, like, heavy screen play action to Debo down in the reds, and that was an overthrow too.
They scored a touchdown on that drive because,
but I'm just saying, like, it's just like these short misses like that. And when I think you look at it from Kyle Shanahan perspective, there's only so much you can do. Like they had, and they were like one of the top three teams throughout the entire NFL season. And you just got to figure out a way to win the big game. Like there's, when you lose to Mahomes and as a coordinator, you lose to Brady, right? It's just like, well, that's two of the best to ever do it. And so it's just like, I don't know if it lingers much more as like, all right, what do we need to do to get like 0.5% better to be able to beat Mahomes? Because that's who you have to think about it as. If it's not Mahomes, then it's like, all right, we got everyone, like we're good. And so that these questions are always hard for me because I'm just like, man, it didn't work out for you. Let's just continue to work and get better and try to get better and try to fix like the small things. Like, I don't think this was a classic. And if anyone else says different, I don't believe you. This was a classic, like the Patrick Mahomes led Chiefs. They took this game and won it. It's not that the 49ers lost the game. In my opinion, like coaching, yeah, the muff punt, I got it. Like, but I don't think Kyle Shanahan did anything to lose the game per se. Like, he played it right. He, like, other than the decision at OT to take the, like, all that stuff, it's just, you can nitpick it now because you lost, but all that stuff is like, I've never been good at that big picture because it's like, what do teams and players actually do after a loss like this? They just get back to work, man. They don't. Yeah. You can't just wallow in it and like just figure out, oh, you know, no, like you got freaking draft, combine, free agency. Like, how are you going to make the team better? Who's going to be a big part of the team? They found their quarterback. Like, they're going to be in this conversation as long as they have Purdy and the team and the defense around them for a long time. Like, it's just, I hate the conversation. And I'll not say you're bringing it up, but I hate the conversation like, well, Shanahan's 0-3 in Super Bowls and 0-2 against. I get it. Like, you're playing against the best player in the world.
I tend to agree with you. It's just I don't think there's anything radical that needs to be done. And we've had a lot of guys who they were the guy who couldn't win one until they did. You know, Andy Reid used to be this guy. I said it totally. Before the game started. I said that Kyle Shanahan is now in his Andy Reid phase, like early Andy Reid phase, where you're a great offensive coach and for one reason or another, you've never been able to get over the top. And maybe that's a quarterback later in his career. Maybe that's a couple of lucky breaks that he's not getting. Yeah. There hasn't gotten the last couple times. I don't know. But if I'm the Niners, I don't think this is some blow it up. Like, oh man, like we have to completely retool how we think about this. I think let's build in some more answers with our protection system for if we get jumped by something like this again, we know how to handle it. Let's use our resources this offseason to bolt up and boost the interior of the offensive line. O-line. Let's draft a guard somewhere. Let's find a tackle somewhere. And then let's roll the ball back out and understand that we're better than 31 other teams are before the season even starts. I mean, they're already going to be one of the Super Bowl favorites heading into the year. So I don't think that they have to do some drastic retooling of who they are. I just think that getting this close again and knowing you could have done it and without a couple self-inflicted wounds, you probably would have done it. It's just a tough pill to swallow. It's just going to take a long time to come to terms with that. And you already could see how much he's been wearing the other ones on his face. Kyle Shanahan has aged a lot in the last 5-6 years. And that's what being an NFL head coach does to you. But now there's another one. And as these things keep piling up, I just think it's going to be important to recognize and acknowledge what sort of toll it takes on him and what sort of toll it takes on the guys who are losing these games.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All right.
It's a tough one, man.
On that note, go enjoy Hawaii. As Kyle Shanahan stares into the existential abyss, you get to go play on the beach with your kids. So
let's go.
Enjoy that, my friend. Thank you very much for the time, and thank you to all of you guys for listening. We will be back a little bit later this week with a collection of the Radio Row interviews that we did. So me and Will Anderson, me and Kyle Hamilton and Kyle Van Noy, me and Aiden Hutchinson and Brian Branch, those will be coming your guys' way packaged together on Friday within the feed. And then Football GM will be coming your way on Saturday. Monday, me and Nate will be talking about our biggest offseason questions as we get the 2024 offseason started. So that's what's coming your guys' way over the next few days. For now, as always, really appreciate you guys listening. We'll talk to you soon.
This was the Athletic Football Show.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.